Quiet, dummy.
Blog Talk Radio.
good evening. This is Dale Sanford. That's S-A-N-F-O-R-D, period, speaking. And I'm here with my partner, Lamont Binkley. Go ahead, Demi.
I ain't no Ann Esther. I ain't no Ann Esther. Jay Binkley from The Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here with...
Aunt Esther. She's so ugly, I could stick her face in some dough and make gorilla cookies.
He actually said that. Red Fox actually said that to her. He was so mean to Aunt Esther, was he not?
If you ever heard his stand-up and his old from the old black nightclubs,
I've heard
that's really nice stuff compared to what he said in those places.
Yeah, he was a blue comedian, as they say, back in the day.
Yes, he was. Yeah,
I remember it was a big deal getting his one album. You Gotta Wash Your. Another name for a mule.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like, whoa. That was back in early, maybe mid-60s, I think, that was floating around. Yeah. Well, that's not really junk. That's collectible. But we got junk for you today as we visit the junkyard.
Yes, as we have, we can make a topic out of anything, I think, as we often do.
You certainly can, Dave. You're a wizard.
But because and one of the reasons I did this because of the amazing X minus one episode that we have here, and I said, I got to build a show around it, because if you don't build it around junkyard, you can't take the story of the junkyard and use it any other way. So we got a great story from X minus one. A wonderful Johnny Dollar story about a junkyard, and to be honest with you, I've listened to it a couple times. I don't know how it fits in with junkyard, but it came up under the search engine of junkyard. So, but we have a Chet's Tales from the Morgue.
What? Oh, I can't wait to find out about Chet Cheddar. That just sounds well strange. Junkyards used to be a big thing, and back in the when we were young, 60s, 70s. And driving cars from the 60s and 70s into the 80s, you had to do a lot of self-repair, and you often went to a junkyard, or at least I did, to find parts that were far more affordable than getting them from the dealer. And in some cases, they were just as functional,
Yeah, and case in point, they do that today. They have junkyards that are just built for like a pull-apart junkyard that's down on Kelly Avenue here in Akron, where it's literally there. They have their cars all typed and in areas, and you go in, you tell them what kind of car you're looking for, and they send you to a specific area, and you take the part off yourself.
Yeah, you bring in your wrenches, and that's incredible savings, though, if it's a part that you don't necessarily need a brand-new part for. And why not? And, of course, one of my favorite movie centers around a junkyard. Christine.
Yeah, okay.
Was housed in a junkyard. Yeah.
So,
but much better.
I'm just going to say, it kind of reminds me, before he gets to the junkyard, the trash nights in New York, he used to ride around on my bicycle and do garbage picking. People throughout pretty nice things there. And since Buffalo was a much, there were a lot more concentrated people than what I have here and what you have, Dale. What I have here in Akron. But, I picked up records and record players and bicycle parts and all kinds of things.
Now, when I lived in Cleveland proper, as they say, within the city limits, every garbage day, the metal man would drive around on garbage day.
Yeah.
It was a guy with a beat-up pickup, a big, huge one, and anything metal he threw back there and recycled it. And I'm sure he made some good money off of it because it looked like he could carry a few tons in that truck.
Yeah, you still do see. I don't see as much as I used to, but when we moved in this particular neighborhood 6 years ago, every trash night there used to be a truck that would drive through here. I haven't seen him drive through here in quite some time now. But
yeah. Nope, and you know what they say, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and have we got some treasures for you tonight?
We do, especially if you like another action-packed adventure with Johnny Dollar, if you can get an action-packed adventure out of a junkyard, and, of course, an amazing X-1 episode. I know you know this one, Dale, because you just absolutely love the X-1 series.
Yeah, this is one of the few folks that I've actually heard before we've broadcast. So this has been a learning adventure for me, all 499 times of it, including today. We'll talk more about Big 500 tomorrow. Let's see. Yeah, we're returning to sci-fi with Junkyard and Suspense. And I don't know, you want to save Chet Cheddar for last since it's kind of mysterious? And different?
That could be up to you. It's absolutely hilarious. I don't know if you want to start with a laugh or end with a laugh.
Let's end with some yucks.
We'll end up with some yucks then, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to torture myself and make myself wait till last for Chet Cheddar.
I'm just saying, because I know you've been curious about this
particular
thing, but...
it's got a great title. well, let's go ahead with some action-packed adventure.
Ah, good old Johnny Dollar. And I'm sure he loves going to places like, well, let's put it this way. I doubt at least half the places he goes to, somebody's shooting at him or bonking him on the head. He's just going to a junkyard. So,
well, you can bonk yourself if you take the wrong step.
Or you can fall off a ladder. It doesn't matter. And
this one is
from May 5th, 1956.
The Peerless Fire Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
You smell smoke, Johnny?
What'd you say? Who is that?
This is Henry Willoughby at Four State Mutual Insurance Company.
Oh, hi, Hank.
And I asked if you smell smoke.
Should I? What kind?
The kind $5,000 makes when it goes up in flames.
Where?
Over in Cranford, the Peerless Junkyard.
Junkyard?
That's right.
But if there's only a $5,000 loss, how can you afford me?
Because what I smell is arson.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Four State Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Peerless Fire matter. Expense account item one, a dollar even, cab to Hank Willoughby's office in the Security National Building, where he lost no time in getting to the point.
Policy was taken out by one Oscar H. Lehman about 4 years ago. He's the owner of the junkyard. Address of the yard is corner of Howard and Kingsway Boulevard.
And why do you suspect arson, Hank?
Our fire didn't start until about 4 o'clock this morning. When I got here to the office a few minutes after nine, the claim was already on my desk.
Almost as though he'd had it filled out and waiting, even before the fire occurred, huh?
Precisely.
How much do you know about this man, Lehman?
Well, nothing really, outside of the data on the policy. His home address is 232 East 4th Street.
Also in Cranford.
Yeah.
Okay, Hank, I'll see what I can see. Item two, 40 cents phone call to make sure the suspect, or at this point, I guess I'd better call him the client, to make sure he'd be around for questions.
Here speaks Oscar Lehman.
Mr. Lehman, this is Johnny Dollar representing your insurance company.
So why do you waste time at the telephone? Well, then maybe you're coming here with my check for $5,000 right away, huh?
Well, you see, there are a couple of things that...
So, all right, I'll be waiting for you when you come with the money.
goodbye.
Huh? Item 3, $120 for a train ticket to Cranford. Item 4, $2 for an old rattletrap taxi when I got there. Cranford is a new town, or rather a new one built on what was left of the old. When the big clock company folded up at the end of World War II, Cranford kind of fell to pieces. But situated as it was, just a few miles above the busy city of New Haven, a bunch of smart New York operators had stepped in and were busy making a nice modern residential community out of it. New stores, new homes, and all the fixings.
You see there in the block up there ahead?
Huh?
They had a big fire there this day, a big junkyard.
Yeah, I see.
Man, it was really hot. Thought it was going to take the three houses there on Howard Street along with it. You know, flying embers and the heat and all. But the wind swung around. They didn't even get touched.
Yeah, well, pull up, will you? I want to look it over.
Okay, mister, you're the boss. Hey, you want me to keep the meter running?
No, I'll leave you here.
Okay. That's 85 cents. But it would have been a buck and a half where you first wanted to go.
Okay. Hey,
Hey, thanks. Boy, how I hate to see that junkyard gone.
Oh, why?
Oh, well, that's where I've been buying my parts to keep this old crate tied together.
You know something? It looks so.
Now that Peerless is gone, I'll probably either have to get a new cab or either try and fix this one up right, you know, and that costs dough.
Yeah, well, happy fixing.
Yeah, like I say, though, out of something bad always comes something good.
Sure.
And I not only mean my taxi, mister, but them houses there, too.
Well, what about them?
Oh, they're on Howard Street. They've been beefing their heads off ever since the yard got its license. So now, no more junkyard. Now the whole place could be residential like it ought to. Like I always say, out of something bad,
good, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I gotta get going.
Hey, you know something? Maybe that fire gives me a good idea. Like, maybe I should burn up this old wreck of mine and the insurance company would have to give me a new one. Hey, how about that?
Maybe you'd better be careful who you say that to.
Hmm? Oh, sure.
Especially not to an insurance investigator.
Yeah,
like
well,
me.
Don't you worry, bud. I'm too smart. You? You?
That's right. Oh, happy day. In spite of the valiant efforts of Fire Chief Dale Marley and his crew, the Peerless Junkyard was just that, junk. And he agreed with the cab driver. The other property owners were probably glad to see the eyesore go up in flames.
Well, you wouldn't like it either, Dollar, having a place like that in your front yard. And just take a look at those folks standing around. You see what I mean.
Yeah, I must admit they don't look very unhappy about it. So the fire started in the shed that stood right here, huh?
That's right, yeah. The big shed that Peerless used to store a lot of old furniture and stuff like that. Hey, Peters, hit that corner over there with some more foam.
Okay, sir.
Yeah, a fellow runs that grocery store on the catty corner. He sleeps upstairs. Over it, said it woke him up. Went off with a boom, like a small explosion.
Have you considered the possibility of arson, Chief?
Yeah, I have. That's why I called New Haven, asking to send up a couple of men from their special squad.
But you found no trace?
Nothing I could put my finger on. You got any ideas?
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe I have. I learned a long time ago that a lumber yard or a furniture factory were about the worst places in the world to look for signs of arson. The wood goes up so hot and so fast. And the remains of this shed wouldn't be much better. So I walked over to the little grocery store and spent item 5, 21 cents, for a loaf of white bread. And I rejoined Chief Marley at the ruins of the shed.
The arson experts can come up from it.
Hey, what's the matter, Dollar? Did you get to eat breakfast?
Oh, something like that. Hey, want a chunk?
Not without strawberry jam and a cup of coffee. Hey, Herb, take it easy over there. Stomping around like that, you wipe out all the clues. Now, like I told you, Dollar, the fire started somewhere right around here.
Uh-huh.
And the quick shift in the wind moved it over that way.
Uh-huh. Chief.
Yeah.
Here, chew a piece of this fresh bread.
What?
That's right, chew it. Get the taste of it in your mouth.
What for?
Just do it, will you please, here.
Well, you got an idea, son?
You bet I have, here.
You mean chewing on a hunk of bread is going... Is going to what?
Not swallow.
What is this, a gag or... Something?
No, not by a long shot. Now watch.
Well, don't throw it away. Now you got my appetite up, I'll have some more.
Here now, chew on this piece.
What, after you dropped it in the ashes?
That's right, chew on it.
Oh, now
wait. Go ahead, do it, I'm serious.
Holy... Kerosene.
That's right.
Well, I'll be doggone.
Yeah,
Fresh bread will pick up even the slightest trace.
Even after the fire?
Even after a fire. That means kerosene was brought in and poured over the floor of this furniture shed to set it off.
And, Dollar, I'm going to get in the police and have them lock up old Oscar Lehman so
no,
fast.
No, wait.
What for?
Until I can talk to Lehman.
Well, now, look.
You look. This isn't any absolute proof of arson.
Well, it's good enough for me. It's good enough for a suspicion charge. I'll tell the police what I found out.
Who found out?
Well,
what I found out.
Now, don't forget that. But if it puts us on the trail of an arsonist, if you like, you can take the credit for it. Only if you'll cooperate.
Yeah, but Dollar...
Otherwise, you'll lose any cooperation from me. Okay?
Okay.
Item 680 cents cab to the address on East 4th Street where Oscar Lehman lived. Like the Howard Street address, this was a has-been section. Lehman's home reminded me of some of those on the other side of the town, next to the junkyard. When the old character let me in, I wasted no time in getting to the point.
You ask why I should be staying here in my home instead of at the yard? And I'm asking you, why not? What good can I do over there? My lovely junkyard is gone. There's nothing I can do. So I'm waiting here to collect the money your company owes me. So are you going to pay me or not?
Well, now, that depends. As I started to say...
I tell you, I didn't even know about the fire till I went down there to open up the gate and start the day.
What time did you go down there, Mr. Lehman?
7 o'clock, like always.
Well, you sure didn't waste any time getting your claim into the office in Hartford, did you?
Of course not. So soon as I see what's happened, I sign up the claim and take it to Hartford. And the office is closed, so I leave it under the door.
Yeah, well...
What else could I do? Sit around and wait to think about it while the money's coming to me? It's my money, so I should have it. You know how much merchandise I have in that yard? $25,000. Retail?
Yeah. Then why'd you burn it up?
You think I'm crazy I should do such a thing? Don't you understand now I'm out of business for God?
Well, what do you mean?
My license for the yard on condition, you know?
A conditional license?
Yeah, that's right. If I'm not in business every day, I lose the license. I lose the lease on the land. Then they make houses, little stores. It's a big development company. So you're crazy to come and talk to me, tell me I should set fire.
Maybe I've suddenly changed my mind, Mr. Lehman. Maybe I've already met the arsonist.
Huh?
And I was just too blind to see him.
Of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Our flag now numbers 50 stars, and behind each star there stands yet another flag representing one of the 50 states. Missouri's state flag is a horizontal tricolor of red, white, and blue. In the center is a circular device bearing the state coat of arms, an eagle symbolizing the superior authority of the nation, a grizzly bear representing Missouri, chosen for his size, strength, and valor, and a crescent moon, symbolic of the shield carried by the second son, Missouri being the second state carved out of the Louisiana Territory. A belt encircles the coat of arms with a motto inscribed, "United we stand, divided we fall." Atop the flag is a cluster of stars representing the Union, with a larger star for Missouri as she surmounts her difficulties and assumes her rank among the states. The state motto is also inscribed on the flag, Salus Populi Suprema Lex Esto. The welfare of the people shall be the supreme law. Surrounding the device is a group of 24 stars. Missouri's state flag, the flag of the 24th state to enter the Union, was adopted on March 22, 1913. And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Peerless Fire Matter.
Something the cab driver had said while taking me to the scene of the junkyard fire had suddenly come back to me. He'd been talking about the nearby property owners, homeowners.
They've been beefing their head off ever since the yard got its license. So now, no more junkyard. Now the whole place can be residential like it oughta. Yeah, like I always say, out of something bad always comes something good.
Item 785 cents, another taxi back to the scene of the fire. The men from the department were still busy cleaning up. Their chief, Dale Miley, had been busy with some detective work. Had some answers that seemed to make good sense.
Okay, Donnie, you see this hardware? See this groove in the foundation wall?
Yeah. Big sliding door, huh?
That's right. And here, the lock was still in a hasp.
Yeah, I see.
It's hardly likely somebody tried to pull a big sliding door closed and lock it after starting a fire with kerosene. It's too dangerous.
Unless he used a wick of some kind.
Yeah, but look here. On the side that faced Howard Street.
Street? I just call this an alley.
Yeah, pretty narrow from the old days. Now, look here.
Well, it's window glass.
Right. Yeah, there was a window here. You see, here's the two parts of the catch from it. The catch was open.
Yeah, but the question is, was it open from the inside or outside?
And I think I've got the answer. Look across the street.
So?
Those homes and the little lawns and gardens in front of them.
So what?
You see the rocks they all use to border their flower beds?
Go on, Chief.
Now, look here. Just inside the shed where the window was, I found this rock under the ashes. And, Dollar, it looks to me like somebody threw that rock through the glass, opened the catch, climbed in, spread the kerosene, climbed out, tossed in a light of some kind, and left in a hurry.
Yeah, but who?
That's just it. You got a better idea than old man Lehman? You talk to him.
Yeah, I think I have.
Like who?
I'll let you know when I find out the name.
Well, now, wait a minute, Dollar.
Okay, I can turn this back on. That's cool.
My mouse got stuck. If you ever had your mouse stuck, you know how painful that can be over there.
Oh, yes.
As the man once said. Well.
Yeah. Time for a new mouse, Dale.
Yeah, this piece of software is going to be going to the junkyard real quick. Make it up look bad. Yep. Why I oughta.
Hey, but Johnny Dollar's he's on the trail to an arson.
And it's our best Johnny Dollar, of course.
What do you think about that trick to find kerosene?
That was nifty. Cool. Yeah, if it's true, that's real nifty.
I'd never heard that before, but you know what? Johnny Dollar doesn't lie. He fibs a little, but he doesn't lie.
Johnny Dollar was the MacGyver of his day.
He was, in a way. Yes, he was.
Yeah.
And he never, there's almost nobody he trusted if they weren't in law enforcement. And even some of those guys he didn't really trust because he thought most of those guys were lazy, you know, because they just took the easy way out where he would go and poke around until he could prove something one way or the other.
Yep. That's right.
Which is one of It's one of the things that makes Johnny Dollar such a great listen to, because of the his ability just to keep going ahead when everybody's ready to write it off for something else. But there's a difference between finding arson and finding out who did it and then proving who did it. That's a lot to do, but you can never count out good old Johnny Dollar.
Nah, he's the man. The man for the job as he explores the case here. And we might as well wrap it up because we might have some more fun bonuses today. You just never know.
You never know.
As we wrap up the Peerless Fire Matter.
I hope that last crack would keep Chief Marley from sending the police after Oscar Lehman. Maybe he was guilty of firing his own junkyard. But with only 5,000 insurance, it didn't make sense. And I had a couple of better ideas, at least about people who might have had reason to do it. Three, as a matter of fact. Four, there were three residences on Howard Street facing what remained of the junkyard. Thanks to the sudden shift of wind, they'd received little damage. I walked down the short length of Howard Street to the first old house. The name Howard McNeil was on the little metal mailbox.
Yes, well, what is it?
Mr. McNeil, I'm Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator, looking into this junkyard fire.
This is a fine time to come around selling insurance after the fire's out.
You should know better, young fellow.
No, you misunderstood me.
Why, do you know what would have happened if that wind hadn't changed? It would have set this whole block on fire. That's what it would have done. It would have burned us all out. We'd have been helpless.
Yes, Mr. McNeil.
Especially that poor widow lady, Miss Cummings, down there in the third house, right across from the shed where the whole thing started.
Mr. McNeil.
Yes?
I'm not here to sell insurance. I'm investigating the fire, understand?
Well, don't.
What's that?
You can stop right now. Just leave things as they be. Don't you know that fire was a blessing?
I'm not quite sure.
I said blessing. That fire was the finest thing that's happened around here in years.
Oh, you like its having happened, huh?
You just bet I do. The only way we could ever get rid of that awful pile of junk right in our front yards. Now, maybe they'll give us back our nice little park that used to set there.
Or build a lot of track houses.
Yeah, now... all right. What did they do? Anything is better than that wretched junkyard. I've hated it. Everybody's hated it. I hated it.
Enough to set it on fire?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Oh, no. Was it me?
Well?
Mr. Dollar. A quiet, peace-loving person like me? Oh, no. Why, I wouldn't even think of such a thing. Especially since that fire might have got out of control and burned me up.
Well, you carry insurance, of course.
I do not. I don't believe in it. No, so don't you try to tell me anything.
I told you I'm an investigator.
Well, why don't you ask that Nazi if he had insurance?
Nazi?
Yes, that Oscar Lehmann that owned that dirty junkyard.
Why do you call him that?
Well, he's a German, isn't he?
Well, it doesn't make him a Nazi.
Well, it does to me. Anybody who'd wangle a license to put up a filthy place like that on our beautiful street, especially if he's a German, well, to me, he's a Nazi of the worst kind. The worst kind. The very worst kind. Thinks he's a ladies' man, too.
All right, now, have you any idea who, besides you, would have liked to see that place burned up?
I certainly have.
Oh.
Why don't you ask the police? They were here at dawn asking us all questions.
You said asking us all.
Of course, I... mentioned the widow Cummings that lived in the third house, and then there's Miss Gertrude Mary Anastasia Conroy, the nice spinster lady who lives next door, and it's a very charming lady, Miss Conroy.
Yeah, well, now would you mind?
Oh, and what spirit she has. Now, that's the way I like them, Mr. Dollar, ladies with spirit. And do you know something? One of these days, I'm going to ask her for a date in spite of the competition.
You never have?
Oh, no, sir, no. I'm not the bold type like some people I know. And I've been working up to it.
And how long have you been a neighbor?
16 years, and you mark my word, one of these days I'm going to mark right up on her front porch, and Miss Conroy, I'm going to say...
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Mr. McNeil.
Yes, but I was going to tell you, oh, dear, I must have said something wrong. Phew.
You'd be wanting.
Miss Conroy?
That's right. And don't you see the sign beside the door? No peddlers, no solicitations. So be gone with you. I'm busy cleaning the smoke out of your house from that awful fire this morning.
Well, that's what I'm calling about, ma'am, that fire. I'm an insurance investigator.
Investigator, huh?
Well, now, just a...
If you're an investigator, young man, let me see your badge.
Badge?
That's right. If you're an investigator, you're a detective. And if you're one of them, you're with the police force.
No.
And if you are, you can go right back and tell your chief I've had me feel right up to here with answering fool questions about that fire. As if I myself did it, huh?
Well, did you?
For years now, I've connived and connipted how to get that terrible, dirty, filthy junkyard out of this neighborhood. And now, poor soul, he's lost it. Oh, I could cry my eyes out.
You what?
Oh, such a lovely old man he is when I finally met him, that dear Mr. Lehman.
Oh?
Oh, the horrible things that Hitler done to him before he escaped them Nazis that took over his fine old country. And when he got here, he put all his savings in that lovely second-hand lot.
Lovely.
So he could earn an honest living.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Such a fine man. Such a gentleman. The way he'd click his heels and bow when he come and call on Sunday afternoon. Oh, he was such a
Wait a minute, Miss Conroy. I don't get it. A couple of minutes ago, you sounded as though you hated that junkyard.
Second-hand lot.
Oh.
And so I did. Until I got to know that nice Mr. Lehman. And I'll tell you this. In spite of the fact they won't ever let him set up in the same kind of business again. If it takes every cent I own, I'll see that he gets started in something else.
Well, I'll be...
Investigator, huh?
Insurance investigator.
Then I suppose I can tell you confidential that I've set me cap for dear Oscar.
You mean you hope to marry him?
Aye, and that I will before I'm through.
But I got the impression that your neighbor, Mr. McNeil...
Oh, that crazy old stick in the mud, that old coot, huh? But if you're from the insurance company, how can I help you, lad, with your investigation thing?
Well, you can tell me this. Was your friend, Mr. Lehman, in need of money, particularly?
Well, no. His business has been good. He drives a nice car and keeps a nice home. But like I said, if he needs more than he's got to get started again, I'll be the first to help him. Besides, it will sort of help to bring us closer together if I'm worrying about him a bit. No, won't it?
Yes, I guess it will. I just want to make sure.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yeah?
It's so blind I was thinking of me darling Oscar. So that's what you were up to with your nasty question.
What?
Implicating that he might have burned up his place by his own self to get the insurance money. Is that what your evil, filthy mind was thinking of?
I didn't say that.
But that's what you meant, now ain't it?
No, after all, somebody set that fire. And if he was in need of money...
And just because I told the poor soul to get his claim in real quick this morning...
You told him?
Of course I did. Give him something to do besides standing around in the ruins, crying his poor old eyes out, keeping his sorrows to himself.
Mm.
But I'll soon put a stop to that. I'll cook him up a real nice mess of corned beef and cabbage, German style, that is, and take it over for his supper to comfort and keep him company. And what will you be doing for the poor soul?
Well, that depends.
Oh, it depends, does it? Well, you and that insurance company better pay up what you owe him instead of making snide talk about maybe he himself set that fire and he's... Oh, get out. Go on, get out. Why should I be wasting my time talking to the likes of you when I've got cooking to do for me?
Oh, brother. This was turning out to be the most offbeat insurance matter I ever handled. Well, there was only one suspect left. The woman living in the third house opposite the shed where the fire had started. The Widder Cummings, McNeil had called her. I went up on the porch, rang the doorbell. And again. After the third time, I was about to decide no one was home when the door slowly opened. And just inside the door, in a wheelchair, sat a little old lady, pale, gray-haired. Her face reflected years of pain.
I've been waiting for you to come, Mr. Dollar.
Well, you know who I am.
I overheard you at my window when you talked to Mr. McNeil and Miss Conroy. Listening to the neighborhood is the only thing I have left these days, tied down as I am to this wheelchair.
Yes, I see. I'm sorry.
Come in and sit down, please.
Thanks. There's no one to take care of you here?
Only Rudolph, who does as little as he dares. And you must take him away, Mr. Dollar.
Rudolph?
My stepson, who keeps me here, waits for me to die.
What?
Not even a rest home where I'd have care and friends, but here to die. He'd help me die, too, if he dared, because of the money.
What money, Mrs. Cummings?
That my husband left me. A lot, Mr. Dollar.
And this Rudolph wants to get his hands on it?
That's all he wants. That's why he wants me dead. But he hasn't dared kill me. Because everybody knows that we're alone here together. And if I should die from his neglect, they'd know he did it. But he's smart. That's why he thought of the fire.
He what?
He thought that it would burn down this house, too, and trap me here.
Mrs. Cummings, do you know what you're saying?
The divine providence. The changing wind kept the fire away.
He set that fire to burn this house and you?
He's clever. He made it known that he'd be away all night, that he wouldn't be back here until he finished his work at the plant in New Haven. But he came back, Mr. Dollar, this morning, before dawn. I heard him here in this house. And from this window, I could see him in the moonlight.
Mrs. Cummings.
No, I must tell you. Quickly, because he'll be coming back from work. His work. To keep up appearances, to keep them from suspecting. His gambling. The terrible people he goes out with at night. Gangsters, that's all. And I must tell you, because if I don't, listen to me.
I'm listening.
I saw him take a can, the kerosene we keep in the cellar for when the electricity goes out. He took it across the street. He broke the window of the shed and went in. Then he came out. He threw a piece of burning waste back in. Then ran.
Mrs. Cummings, are you sure?
I lied to the police. I couldn't make myself tell them. After all these years of knowing what he's been and saying nothing. Well, I thought I'd wait for him. Maybe when he saw his evil plan had failed, that I was still here. Maybe I could make him give himself up. But in my heart, I knew he wouldn't. Because he's bad. All bad.
Mrs. Cummings, I'm glad you told me.
God forgive me. But I knew that if I didn't, he'd find some other way to... You must take him away, Mr. Dollar. Before he does murder.
Expense account item 8, $10, board and room. I've stayed an extra day in Cranford to clear things up. For while I waited for Rudolph to return, I found the kerosene can he'd used down in the cellar. Chief Marley found the top from it in the ashes. The police have since found only his prints on it. Rudolph is in the city jail. And I'm sure Mrs. Cummings will testify against him. After all, her life is at stake. Hoskin Lehman, his claim will be paid in full. Well, I hope he and Miss Conroy live happily ever after. Expense account total, including incidentals on the way back to Hartford, $14.46. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week... Exploration in the high Sierra country of California. And at the end of the trail lies death. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Peggy Weber, John Stevenson, Herb Vigran, Hans Conried, Boris Lewis, and Parley Bear. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Coverley speaking.
Okay.
There we go with an episode of Johnny Dollar with Bob Bailey. And yeah, I picked up on Parley's voice right away, Dave.
Yep, yeah. Well, he was on so many. It was funny that he almost had him. The name of the character he played was almost McNear. Howard McNear, a good buddy of his, who was almost in everything else. So I thought that was funny that he played almost a guy that almost was a McNear. And and both of these guys were in a lot of both of those two. I mean, they were in so many things. They were in every week on Gunsmoke, as Parley Bear was Chester and Howard McNear was Doc. But then they showed up on a lot of these Johnny Dollars. They were on Escape. They were on Suspense. If CBS had a show, they appeared on it, even if they were in a semi-regular role or not. You know, it was like John Daner who stood up all over the place as well.
They're great
radio actors. And it's really it's hard to hear Parley Bear like that and think of him as Chester on Radio's Gunsmoke. But
yeah,
But he was.
And that's a good solution for Johnny Dollar in the junkyard.
Yeah, I guess it's a little easier to prove arson when mom tells on her son.
Yep.
That probably makes it a little easier.
That's a hard thing for a parent to do, turn in your rotten kid.
Well, of course it isn't easy. You know, you don't raise your kid to do something like that. Generally, you don't.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I look around and wonder.
First thing that happens when something happens is, where are their parents? And, you know, it's not really a fair statement a lot of times. You know, so now if the kid's lost, then you can say, hey, where are their parents? And that's a fair statement. But if they're out doing really bad things, that doesn't mean you can necessarily just blame the parents for the way they raise their kids.
Well,
and you and I have both raised a few kids, so between us.
Yeah, a couple little axe murderers on my side.
Mine are only firebugs, so, you know.
Yeah. I only abuse them mentally. Mess with their heads. That's the best thing ever.
Yep.
No, because if they have a sense of humor, and mine do, then they tend to laugh at some of life's troubles rather than, you know.
Yeah.
Cave in to them.
Well, and that's kind of how you and I both look at a lot of things. And I did a lot of things with my kids when they were growing up. I was busy working, but I also spent a lot of time with my kids where I could. And we did a lot of things and supported them in their sports and Saturday morning bowling and baseball and you name it. We were there. So it's just a...
Yep. I remember taking the kids to Larceny Day. That was fun.
To Larceny?
Larceny Day, yeah, at the school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Hangman Knot Tying 101. That was fun.
Oh, okay.
The teacher there was cool.
Yeah.
I met him at the PTA meeting. It was pretty cool. Oh,
they didn't do a 13 things on the rope, did they?
I hope not. That's bad luck.
Yeah, that's the proper way to do it. You know, for a hangman's noose is 13, you know, loops.
Yeah. Supposed to be bad luck for the guy with the head in his noose.
Well, yeah. Anyway, any kind of knot around the guy who's going to be in there is bad luck, but yep. Yeah.
But we got good luck. Two more shows to go about the old junkyard.
Right.
And let's go into some science fiction here with a favorite program of mine, X-1. This one's a fun tale called
premiere,
The Junkyard.
Yeah, the premiere of all science fiction anthology programs on radio. There are other science fiction programs and stuff and kids shows, but this is this is something else. This is a truly an amazing series that sometimes really almost made you want to cry and sometimes scared the heck out of you and sometimes made you laugh, depending on the story. This one doesn't make you laugh and it doesn't make you cry, but it's an interesting tale nonetheless.
It makes you think. That's right, and this one's called, oddly enough, The Junkyard, and it's from...
Hey, we're going to stay in 1956. This is from February 2nd, 1956.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, when you hear the hearty laugh and familiar voice of the great Gildersleeve tomorrow night, you know you're in for some hilarious adventures. Because wherever Gildy is around, why, somehow things never seem to go as planned. It might be his impulsive nature, or maybe it's his incurable weakness for the fairer sex. But whatever it is, the great Gildersleeve is bound to keep you laughing for a full 30 minutes. Tune in tomorrow night and meet Judge Hooker, Nephew Leroy, Housekeeper Bertie, and all the rest of the friendly people from Somerville as they join the great Gildersleeve. And I'll stay tuned for X-1 on NBC. Countdown for blast-off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-
Tonight's story, Junkyard, by Clifford D. Simak.
The funny thing about the whole thing was the fact that we had never intended to land on Planet Nine. We circled it and decided it was strictly a low-grade affair. It wouldn't amount to anything for a billion years or so. As commander of a galactic survey team, I couldn't waste my time on it. Then my exec saw this junkyard through the telescope. We landed. Took a look at a load of alien machine parts discarded by some other spaceship, and then prepared to take off for Earth. It had all been a waste of time.
Engine room, MacIver.
This is Commander Warren. All secure?
Yes, sir.
Very well. Count down for blastoff.
Engine room ready, sir.
X minus 5. Minus 4. Minus 3. Minus 2. Minus 1. Fire. Mac, what's wrong down there?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Brady, get the data analyzer ready. We'll have to correct for a new takeoff time.
That's the first time I ever heard of engine failure before takeoff.
Well, better before than after. Engine room?
Yes, sir.
What's happening? You boys ready yet?
No, sir.
Well, burn it, man. Get going. I want those engines started.
Sir.
What is it?
I don't quite know what to say.
Well, say something or I'll have you busted.
We can't start the engines, Commander. At least I can't.
Well, why not?
I don't know.
Klein, put Klein on.
Lieutenant Klein, sir.
Lieutenant, what is going on down there? Is there something wrong with the engines?
No, sir. I've double-checked them.
Well, then let's get them heated up or we'll be on this godforsaken planet the rest of our lives.
We can't do it, sir.
Klein, suppose you tell me exactly why you can't start the engines. Can you do that?
Yes, sir.
All right, why?
Because, sir, we can't remember how.
What?
Yes, sir, we've forgotten how to start the engine.
Lieutenant, report up here in 1 minute. Bring Dr. Spencer with you.
Yes, sir.
All right, Brady, what have you got it?
Got what, Iron?
Don't play innocent. You and I have been doing planet surveys together for 15 years. You carry enough dead weight in grain alcohol on every trip to keep you happy for a million light years. Now, obviously, the boys in the engine room have gotten into it.
Impossible.
Where is it?
I got a few fists in my locker, but nobody's touched it. I checked a few minutes ago.
Well, then somebody has got some in the engine room. Come in.
Lieutenant Klein, sir, I brought Dr. Spencer as ordered.
Hello, Doc. Did Klein here tell you what's going on?
He did.
How long will it take you to get these guys sobered up?
I can't.
Why not?
Because they're not drunk. I tested Klein in my office.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. Are you trying to get me to actually believe that these men, intergalactic engineers with years of hyper-fission experience, have forgotten how to start the engines of this ship?
That's right.
You're serious?
Dead serious, Ira. Somehow, has caused these men to forget how to start the engines.
There it was. It fit in perfectly with a lot of other annoying little things that had been happening to us ever since we put down on Planet Nine. It was to have been a routine exploration of a low-grade, uninhabited planet. Some routine exploration. All right, Klein, now listen to me. Do you have manuals aboard? Engineering manuals?
Yes, sir.
Take the engine room boys and study those manuals. They'll tell you how to start the ship, won't they?
Yes, sir.
Okay, get going. Doc, I'd like you to stay here with me and Brady for a minute.
Okay.
Report back to me, Klein.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Doc, you're supposed to be an expert on space medicine. What is it?
I've never seen anything like it, Ira.
Brady?
Search me, Captain. I've seen them with space blues, alien psychoses, the works. But I've never seen a disease that could make a crew forget how to start the engines.
Maybe it isn't a disease.
Okay, what then?
Maybe it's a deliberate thing.
You mean they're faking?
No, I know Klein and the others too well for that. I mean, maybe there's some outside influence.
Doc, we've surveyed this planet from top to bottom. We know there isn't a living cell on it.
What about the junkyard?
What junkyard?
Oh, he means that pile of rusty space engine parts we found. The boys nicknamed it the junkyard.
He's right. Somebody put it there.
Well, we know that another spaceship landed here. We know that from the blast marks on the rock. We know that for some unexplained reason, they took their engine apart and tried to put it together again. We know they succeeded in building a much simpler engine, leaving a lot of spare parts, and we know that they took off. The blast-off marks tell us that, too.
What we don't know is whether or not they left somebody behind, or something.
What about that stone tower, Ira?
The boys looked it over. It's just a pile of stones. They probably threw them together as a shelter while they were rebuilding their engine.
Oh, that sounds too simple.
I don't like that tower, Ira.
Why not?
I don't know. It was scary. It had that black look about it, the smell of death. I felt it when I walked past with Klein or MacIver.
Oh, that's the Celt in you, banshees and spooks.
I still don't like it. I need a drink.
Skip it. We should be ready to blast off in a few minutes. Engine room. Engine room. What's going on down there? Engine room. Lieutenant Klein.
Daddy. Is that you, Daddy? Did you bring me a present? Daddy, I'm scared.
Holy mackerel, that's Klein. He's gone off his rocker. Klein! Doc, I think we better get down to that engine room.
When Doc examined Klein, he found him to have the mind and memory of a 6-year-old.
That's it, Ira. Something drained Klein of his memory. And that's as much as I can tell you.
Well, that's a big help.
Here's the manual he was reading.
Well, at least we can follow this manual and get off this stinking planet. Hand it to me.
Right here. Anything wrong, Ira? Is it all there?
It's all here, Doc. This is the engine manual that tells all about the engines. How they operate, how to locate trouble, how to fix them, how to start them.
Well, what is it then? You're sweating like a pig.
All of a sudden, I can't remember the symbols. Doc, I've forgotten how to read.
I left the engine room and went out through the lock to stand on the outside platform of the ship. I looked over the junkyard where the metal of the rusted engine parts gleamed. There was a riddle there, a riddle we hadn't been able to figure out. Why had an alien spaceship landed here, ripped out its engines, and then put together a simple, less efficient engine and taken off again? And they had worked in an awful hurry, judging by the mess they left. Why? Why?
Mind if I join you, Ira?
No, help yourself, Doc. How's Klein?
We've made him some toys. He's playing with them. I've assigned Mac to see that he doesn't hurt himself.
Doc.
Yes?
Have you got any ideas on what's happening to us?
Well, man experiences incidents, gathers knowledge, knows emotions. Then, as he grows older, he begins to forget those experiences, forget that knowledge. That's what life is, a long series of forgettings. Here, on 9, in some impossible way, the forgetting is speeded up. It happens overnight.
No, there's more to it than that. Well, I'm going back to my cabin, try to get some rest.
That you, Ira?
That's me, Batters.
What gives?
We're in a jam.
There's been planets I wouldn't mind being marooned on, you know. But this ain't one of them. There's something here, Ira. I can feel it.
Yes, I can feel it myself. Maybe we should have looked around more.
Klein looked around. Klein was the one found that tower.
Bertie, that's right. He did.
He said he didn't like it. He said it scared him.
In the morning, Bad Ears, we'll go and see that tower. In the morning, I took Doc and MacIver and Brady with me, and we walked across the valley to the stone tower. It wasn't much of a tower, maybe 8 or 9 feet high, made of rocks piled one on top of the other.
Pretty solid. Well built and odd. Type F culture, I'd say.
Did anybody bother to look inside this thing? MacIver, you were here with Klein yesterday.
Yes, sir. We couldn't find a way in, Captain. Klein poked around but gave up.
We'll make a way in. Stand back. I think I can shoot the top off it. Oh, now that should be big enough for a man to lower himself into. Okay, pass the rope around my shoulders.
Captain.
Yes?
In case there's anything, well, dangerous, maybe I ought to go. After all, I'm survey engineer.
MacIver's right, Ira.
Okay, Mac, your responsibility.
Yes, sir. Just fasten the rope under my arm.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Now, I'll climb up and lower myself in. If I pull twice, haul me out. One pull means okay. Give me a hand, Brady, huh?
How about a quick shot of whiskey first?
Never touch it. Brady.
Can you see inside?
Black as a tomb. I'm going to lower myself. Pay out a little rope. Well, it's been lovely. Here we go.
One tug. He's on the ground inside.
Yeah, I wonder what he's found.
I still don't like it.
Oh, Brady, there's probably not a thing in there except a few... There's two tugs. Three. Come on, haul them out.
Heave!
Brady, carefully pull the top.
Right. Easy now, Mac. What the heck is in there anyway? Mac?
Dada?
Holy jumping asteroids. Doc, he's flipped.
No, he hasn't lost his mind. He's just reverted to babyhood.
We stood there at the foot of the tower, stunned. MacIver sat on the ground, happy as a clam, playing with his fingers and talking happy little nonsense syllables. Doc, take a look at him. Make sure that he's okay physically.
Check. If it's fright, his pulse will be way up. Mac, let me have your hand. That's a good fellow. Now. Good heavens.
What is it?
I've forgotten what the normal pulse rate is. Pulse. Pulse?
Doc, let's get out of here. Brady, pick up MacIver and bring him back to the ship. Come on, let's get away from this tower. A few minutes later, Brady and I sat in the captain's quarters. He didn't do much talking, just sat and tipped his bottle to his lips ever so often. Well, at least we know in a general way what we're up against.
Do we?
We know there's been knowledge lost, important information forgotten.
Check.
Now, that memory, that lost skill, that knowledge went somewhere. Maybe there's something in that tower that takes it away. And I have a silly feeling we might even get it back.
Have a drink.
That is, get a couple of men, volunteers.
Now?
Now.
What for?
We're going to find out what's inside that tower.
We will find out what is in that tower in just a little bit.
I almost forgot why we're here. We got to get away from that that place, that tower. I forget things. I got to have something to blame it on. When I forget everything, I have to have something to blame it on.
It's because you sometimes you in life you reach terminal capacity of knowledge, and as soon as you learn something new, you lose another fact.
I have never been accused of that, but
you could hit what is it maximum capacity at some point. So as you gain new information, as one does every day, you start to something else leaks out.
It's always been my philosophy. If you learn one useless thing every day, at the end of a year you will have learned 365 useless things. So there,
yes,
that's part of my philosophy of life.
And then we get to do radio. That's when,
and that's what, when I do the sports show and the introduction I have, where, you have people with a lot of knowledge, but having even less knowledge makes it easier to do an hour program. So since we do 2 hours, we have even less knowledge.
That's right. Thank God for radio. Thank God for the old time shows. Wouldn't want to hear us for 2 hours.
Nope.
Maybe you would. Maybe we would, especially if we mix Gar in here, who we hope is feeling better soon. We miss our brother.
Yes. Yep, yep. We always wonder if with three shows, we'll get them all in. But somehow, we always seem to have, a little extra time when Gar is in here with his coffee pot.
Yeah, I wonder how that happens. Must be happenstance. Must be happenstance. Certainly could be some sort of connection.
No. Because he knows there's a whole lot of radio yet, left in the show. So
yes. That's always on the top of his mind.
Yep. That and caffeine.
Unless he's standing next to the tower, which is growing in his living room.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that guy.
He is a good guy, and I love having him on the show. I miss him when he's not here.
We do.
Because we have to work so much more when he's not here.
Yes.
And we don't have a boinger.
Yeah, beg your pardon. Speak for yourself. I may not have a boinger, but I do have other things.
Wow, you have a Slim Whitsky. All right.
I do. Whitsky. That was Superhost, wasn't it?
No, that was Big Chuck. And Chuck did the singing for it, too.
Superhost may have done a parody as well, because I remember that.
He did. He did
do
a Slim
Whitman
parody.
And Boxcar Willie. And
Yeah.
Big Nose Kate or something. I don't know.
These are some of our local horror. We were just so... I know we've said it so often, but it's true. We have been so blessed in Northeast Ohio to have as many TV personalities as we had, with Superhost and Houlihan and Big Chuck and Little John and Goulardi and
the Ghoul.
The Ghoul.
Not and far. We had the Cool Ghoul. Wasn't that down in Canton Way or something?
There was he was kind of a takeoff of the Cincinnati Cool Ghoul. He went down in that area and caught him when he was in college and asked if we could do him when he came back here. And the guy said, well, I think he had to take an aptitude test first or something. But he was allowed to do it. And down in Canton also. And then when he left, the guy that replaced him was the son of Ghoul.
Yep.
So so we have been so fortunate. And then with the internet host, we've had quite a few from the area as well that have really made a little bit of an inroads here and there. But
we've had a few, and now they're stuck with us.
That's right. It just keeps going downhill, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And but what goes uphill? Is the intensity of this story, The Junkyard from X-1. Let's wrap it up. We'll be back.
We lowered a rotating infrared movie camera into the tower, took some pictures, and went back to the ship for a look. There was something in there, all right.
Now, as far as we can determine, this thing we photographed is shaped like a watermelon standing on end. The movement of the hairs all over it suggests vibrations, such as an antenna of an insect. Underneath are wires leading to terminals that seemed plugged right into the thing.
You think it's a form of life?
My guess is a combination of living organism and machine. After all, man and machines work together. The difference is that man retains his individual identity.
Well, since it doesn't locomote, somebody or something must have put it there.
Exactly.
It looks like some kind of communication organism.
If it is, it's a communication machine that is built to take in information rather than pass it along.
Doc, do you really think that egg in there has been stealing our memory?
Why not?
Well, because it's too wild, that's why not.
It's no wilder than a lot of other things we found. Say that egg is a device for gathering knowledge.
But there's no knowledge here to gather. I mean, how often does a ship land on an out-of-the-way melon like this?
Wait a minute, Brady. Who says that knowledge has to be collected here?
What?
I said, why do we assume that knowledge has to be collected right here on Planet Nine? We forget things back on Earth, don't we?
Good Lord.
Suppose you were some race setting out fish traps for knowledge, and you had plenty of time to gather it. Where would you put your traps? On a planet swarming with intelligent beings where the traps would be found and destroyed or their secrets snatched away? Or would you put them out on some second-rate world where nobody would ever bother them?
Good heavens, I'd pick a spot just like this.
Let me fill in this picture, Doc. I think that some unknown race is bent on trapping knowledge throughout the galaxy.
Ira, if what you say is true, if it is, then every time someone on Earth forgets something, it's because one of these eggs has drained it out of him.
Well?
It's too fantastic.
Have you got a better guess?
No.
The question is, what do we do next? If anybody gets near that egg, he winds up like some puling little baby.
You were pretty near it that first day. Did you forget anything?
Well, how should I know? I was too pleasantly lit up on grain spirits to know the difference.
Well, the question is still, what now?
I'm going outside to think.
Ira.
Yes?
There is one thing to keep in mind.
What is that, Doc?
If those are memory traps, then there must be a way for somebody to empty them. And if we're ever going to get away from here, what's gone in has got to come out.
I stood out on the platform of the ship and tried to make some sort of pattern of it. Forgetfulness. That was the key word. All through the galaxy, in every culture, there was forgetfulness. There were lots of learned theories, of course, kinks in the brain, neuroses, data processing. But suppose they were wrong. Might it not be that forgetfulness was caused by thousands upon thousands of these memory traps planted throughout the galaxy, nibbling away at the conscious memory of all the sentient beings that lived among the stars? On Earth, a man forgets slowly because the traps are far away. But here, in their very shadow, a man forgets suddenly. And then another thought entered my mind. What kind of race had set these traps? How did they empty them? How? How?
Brady!
Huh? Where do you keep your liquor?
Not cheap.
Come on, where?
It's in my locker.
Get it out of there, all of it.
Ira.
That's a direct order.
Okay. All of it.
Is that it?
Yeah. I never thought I'd see the day when you pulled rank on me, Ira. If you confiscate this stuff, so help me, I'll never
forget. Who said anything about confiscating? That is, have you ever really hung one on? I mean, just got pie-eyed drunk.
Let's see. Yeah, there was once on Mars.
Was that the worst?
It was beautiful. Took me 3 days to sober up. They say I fought off the whole galactic patrol for hours.
Well, do you think you got enough here to get that polluted again?
I got a pretty good supply, Ira.
Well, that's good, because in 1 minute, I'm going to give you a direct order to hang on the biggest, most monstrous drunk in the entire history of the universe. But first you have to volunteer.
I volunteer.
No, not until I explain why I'm doing this.
Ira, this sort of project don't need reasons. It's a pleasure.
Let me finish. You know that egg up in the tower?
Yeah.
The minute you get near it, it grabs your mind, wipes it clean, right?
Yeah.
And a lead space helmet doesn't shield you, as we saw with MacIver.
Right.
Now, Doc thinks this egg is a kind of communications thing.
It must be.
Okay, you're a communications man. What do you do when you can't shield a communication?
Well, that's easy. You scramble it. Any fool knows. Holy mackerel.
Exactly. Are you still game?
You think it'll work?
I don't know. I think it might.
Well, suppose it doesn't.
Maybe you're a babbling infant like Klein and MacIver.
If we don't stop that thing, it'll happen anyway.
Unless we can remember how to start the engines.
Okay, Ira. I'll do it. When do I start?
Right now.
Well, Ira, here's mud in your ever-loving intergalactic eyeballs. You know something? I'm beginning to like this mission already.
Ah. that kills the last bottle.
How am I doing, our old buddy?
You're not drunk enough. I should have picked somebody like Doc, except he'd probably pass out.
I'm not drunk enough, huh, old buddy pal?
Not yet.
Well, then, in which case, old buddy, I'm going to have to do something I never like to have to do.
What's that?
I'm going to have to go into my extra special emergency reserve supply. It's a little supply I keep in case of getting marooned on a planet, you know? I don't like to go into it, but in this case, it's my duty. I'm a rambling wreck from Georgia Tech and a heck of an engineer. A rambling wreck from Georgia Tech and a heck of an engineer. Woo! Blast off!
Okay, I guess you're ready. What do you think, Doc?
Most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Is he drunk enough?
What I want to know is what's keeping him conscious.
Okay, Bad Ears, on your feet. Help him up, Doc.
Right.
Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech.
Let's go, Bad Ears.
Right. Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech.
Somehow we pushed, hauled, and stumbled Bad Ears Brady out of the ship and up the rocks to the egg tower. We erected a tripod over the hole with a block and tackle, passed a rope around Brady's chest, and hauled him over the entrance to the tower. There he swung like some overstuffed pig, singing raucously under the eerie moonlight.
Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech.
Well, what do you say, Ira? We got the earphones on him so they can't slip off.
They're on.
Well, I guess we're ready to lower him.
Ira.
Yep.
You sure? It's a man's life.
I'm not sure, Doc. But as commander of this expedition, I sometimes have to risk the lives of my men.
Okay, Ira.
Lower away before I start to get sober. Lower away! Blast off! Fire one! Fire two! Bon voyage, Ira!
Good luck, Brady.
Good luck. He's at the bottom, Ira.
Bad Ears, can you hear me?
Get your hands out of my hair. Something's got his hands in my hair, Ira.
Oh, the thing must be picking at his brain. Brady, listen to me. Do you see the egg?
Yeah, that's my buddy, Ira. My little old egghead buddy. You and me buddies, egghead, right? Have a drink.
Oh, good Lord, he's got a bottle with him. He's pouring it on the egg. Brady, listen to me. The wires.
Wires?
The lead wires you took in with you.
Yeah.
Pull out the studs on the egg and hook your wires to it. You got that?
Just a minute. Me and egg here's got to have a drink.
Oh, good heavens. It's no use, Ira. He's too drunk to know what he's doing.
I'll try again. Brady, listen. Your friend, the egg, can't hear you, see? He can't have a drink until you hook your wires into him. You got that?
Sure. That's an awful thing. That's dreadful. Okay.
What's he doing? Doc, you getting any impulses?
Not a thing.
Maybe we better haul him out. If he starts to sober up...
Maybe we'd better.
Okay, one, two...
Wait a minute.
What?
I'm getting something, Ira. What? This is fantastic. Oh, I'm getting something.
All right, haul him out, quick. Come on.
Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. Rambling wreck.
Brady, are you all right? Doc, help me. Take a look at him. Is he okay?
Yes, he's okay. Just passed out.
Let's get him back to the ship.
Right. You know what, Ira?
What?
Tomorrow about 9 a.m., we're going to be in on the most colossal hangover in the history of mornings after.
We were in on more than Doc Spencer had bargained for. More than any human being had any business being in on.
Oh...
Well, Brady, how do you feel?
Shoot me.
You turned the trick.
Trick?
The tower. You hooked into the egg. The stuff is rolling out now. Doc and the boys have got a recording hooked up. The stuff they're listening in on is enough to set your teeth on edge.
What stuff?
The information that mind trap has been collecting for hundreds of years. It'll take us years to sort it out, but we're getting some of it straight already.
Any of our own stuff?
Plenty.
Anything on engines?
Well, not on our engines.
So?
We got the dope on the junkyard engine. Mac and the boys are hoping to get it assembled. We're ripping out our own engines and just keeping some of the parts.
Another junkyard, huh?
Another junkyard. The engine we're building now is superior to anything ever built.
Pretty handy little gadget, that egg. Only one thing.
What's that?
Tell Doc if he comes across a good hangover remedy to let me know, huh?
Oh. It took us about 6 days to assemble new engines using some of our parts and some of the advanced designs from the junkyard. During most of that time, Doc Spencer sat down at the tower with a set of headphones monitoring the information from the egg. He was like a man possessed. I didn't think anything unnatural was happening until the night of the sixth day.
Well, that does it. The boys have got the engines ready for blast-off.
There's a full moon, too.
We should be able to lift her by tomorrow morning, huh?
We're blasting off in exactly 1 minute, that is.
What?
In exactly 1 minute.
But Ira, Doc, and some of the techno boys are down monitoring that egg.
I know it.
Well, it'll take them 20 minutes to get back into the ship with all that equipment.
They're not getting back.
Huh?
I said they're not getting back.
Ira, are you nuts?
Come here, that is. I want you to take a look through this field scope. You can get a good close-up of Doc and the boys who have been monitoring that egg.
Now, wait till I get it focused.
You got them?
Yeah.
Take a close-up.
Mother in heaven.
You see why we have to leave them here?
Those faces, they're like some kind of beast. What is it, Ira? What's happened to them?
The same thing that must have happened to the crew of the last ship that touched here. The same thing that made them blast out of here in such a tearing hurry.
What?
That is, there isn't only knowledge in that thing. Those boys are monitoring something else.
Something else.
Personality, that is. They're not human anymore. They're turning alien. They were still there when the ship roared up away from Planet Nine and pointed her silver nose toward Earth. We could see them in the scopes. A group of tiny figures crouched over the recording equipment, their earphones plugged into the egg. They didn't even look up when we blasted off. They were no longer human now. They were something else. Something a million light years old. And of another world.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the R. DeWitt Miller story, Swenson Dispatcher. The story of a shrewd but unscrupulous spaceship dispatcher who tries to best the rival airlines by unethical means, and with most surprising results. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Junkyard, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Clifford D. Simak and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were John Larkin, Bob Hastings, Mercer McLeod, Stan Early, and Jack Orison. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Let's visit Fibber McGee and Molly.
Ah, NBC. Another great show from X-1. Yeah, bye.
What, you didn't want to hear the promo from Fibber McGee and Molly, did you?
Nah, we got to get rolling here because we got a whole interesting 30 minutes of the return of the constipator. Dave, you must tell me what.
No. The master constipator. It's from
the master.
The master constipator. It's from the constipation constellation.
Wait. It's from the constipation constellation?
Yeah, why not? This is science fiction, man. All right, let's give you a little bit of
ladies
rundown.
Ladies and gentlemen, most people record songs about love, heartbreak,
uh-oh,
loneliness,
uh-oh,
being broke, Nobody's actually went out and recorded a song about real pain. The band and I have just returned from the General Hospital, where we caught a man in the right position. We named this song Constipation Blues.
Yes, he does call it that, but we actually have an episode of Chet Cheddar here.
Oh, okay. You stopped the narration. Okay. Yeah, Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue. Chet Cheddar is an obliging morgue attendant. He's a licensed embalmer and resident storyteller named Chet Cheddar to a passing stranger of the night, played by you, the listener. Stories Chet relates to us are all quite fanciful. They deal with topics that would be classified supernatural and science fiction. They border on outrageous. The name like this, you can understand that. But that's that's what they're meant to be. Roughly half-hour shows feature a nice, likable, rural southern manure hauler by the name of Elmer Korn, who always finds himself involved in some insane predicament. The creators of the series themselves admit that the show is rather offbeat, but you will find it not without its own charm, which lies with the humorous writing of the reoccurring characters.
Yep.
The series comes... Not...
Go ahead.
Okay, you know what? I have a little bit on the M&J Audio Theater Company, but why don't we save that for the midpoint here? But... And as I told Dale actually is not familiar with this at all. And I told him it's kind of the voice kind of reminds me of the Crypt Keeper. So, you know, we're in for a lot of fun. It is definitely offbeat and it is funny. it's parts of it are kind of hard to hear just because of what the voices are and such. But I tell you what, I really think you're going to enjoy this.
Yeah, Dave, we better get moving. This one's going to be hard to pass. It's Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue. Return of the Master Constipator. Oh, God.
M&J Audio Theater presents Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue.
Another day, another story. Well, here, have a seat, stranger. Yes. My name is Chet Cheddar. I'm the morgue attendant and a resident storyteller. I think today I would like to pick up on a story about Gail Taylor. You remember? That middle-aged man who built his own spaceship and traveled to a far-off galaxy. As you may recall, he encountered the evil mechanical Master Constipator. Well, miraculously, the Master was safely enclosed in a portion of his ship that was designed to withstand such a blast. After regaining his tyrannical throne, the Master was ordered to report to a level of authority even higher than himself. The mastermind of the galaxy of constipation, the great creator.
Thank you.
O great creator?
I knew how to make cars in 57, boy. And this baby's gonna run when I find the points for it.
Wow.
Hey, can I drive it when the cops give me my license back, Gail?
Well, we'll see, Pedro.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow, man. There's a spaceship landing in the street, Gail.
Yeah.
And it looks bigger than the one you built, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I wonder... No, it can't be.
Hey, cool. Hey, look what's coming out of that thing. It's RoboCop.
Oh, no. It can't be. I killed that dude, man.
Well, greetings, Mortal.
No.
I bet you're surprised to see me, aren't you, you little quivering mass of protoplasm?
I don't believe it.
I'm your worst nightmare come true, you piece of filth. You and I got a little score to settle.
Hey, are you really a robot?
Whatever you are, do not touch the armor. Fingerprints tarnish the surface.
Hey, cool looking skin you got there, man.
I don't believe it. You actually touched me.
Yeah, man. Hey, you're the dude from the monster truck rally, ain't you?
Hey. Hey, you overgrown 10-10. You shot my friend Pedro.
The paralysis is only temporary, human.
You idiot.
Surprised to see me, Snookum.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I blew your mechanical butt into history.
Obviously, you greatly underestimated my resiliency, you puss.
Yeah, obviously. So I guess you're back to kill me, huh?
Oh, I'd like to. I'd like to take this laser pistol and shoot little bits off your body. It's little pieces of flesh.
Whoa.
And watch it die slow and suffer and scream.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it would be justified after what happened to my 5,000 brothers.
Hey, wait a minute. What have I got to do with what happened to your brothers?
They thought I was dead after you destroyed my starship. Huh. They were traveling to Earth to kill you and
what? What?
They were all engulfed in an exploding sun.
Well, hey, it's not my fault your brothers flew into a supernova, man.
Oh, you find that amusing, do you? Yeah. My brothers all die horribly, and you chuckle. Well, mortal, laugh now, because you're about to die of fright.
Whoa.
You're about to go insane with fear when you hear the news that I've got.
Oh, and what is this horrible news, Master Constipator?
You have been ordered to appear before the great creator.
Oh, and is that supposed to scare me?
What? Good God, mortal.
Mm.
Are you that insanely stupid? I've seen men in my galaxy pull their own heads off to avoid seeing the great creator.
Wimp.
He even scares me.
Well, listen, Metal Mouth. I appreciate your little visit and everything, but my space traveling days are over. So you just tell this great creator dude that I can't make his little social gathering, all right?
I have wasted enough time with you, you trash.
Mm-hmm.
I have grown weary of this verbal exchange.
Hey, what the hell is this thing, man?
I have just zapped you into an electrified laser cage.
Hey.
I wouldn't touch the bars if I were you.
Oh, yeah, what's it gonna...
You stupid long-haired freak. You just had to find out, didn't you?
Yeah, just call me Captain Curious. Whoa, looks like I'm captured now. I'm actually starting to get scared, Master. But please let me out of the cage long enough to put on my favorite evening dress, please, Master, so I can look good for the great creator. I want to put on some long fake eyelashes and some fake fingernails, man.
Now look, human. You can't act this way in front of the great creator. You get all this silliness out of your system right now. Because the great creator does not have a sense of humor.
Oh,
he
no.
never laughs.
Whoa.
Ever.
Oh.
So clam up.
Oh, why? What? Are you responsible for my behavior?
I wouldn't worry about me, you little insect. I'd worry about how I'm going to hold up under torture. Because when a great creator gets a hold of you, he's going to run you through the mill. He's going to dissect you. He's going to pull your arms off like the wings of a fly. You'll be boiled, cut up, fried, and shredded. And I get to watch the whole thing. Come on, human. I can't wait to see the great creator start pulling you apart. Oh, it's a great day to be a master gun to be.
The master starship traveled at warp speed towards the galaxy of Constipation. Mr. Taylor was locked away in a small metal room.
Friggin' door's locked shut. No way I'm getting out that way. No control panel on this side. Hey, some warm air coming out of that vent screen. Let's see. Yeah, vent. I wonder if I could fit in there.
There. The human scream will be music to my sound system. I'm going to cut out his disrespectful tongue for a souvenir.
God, the metal maniac ain't got a clue. Hey, if I could hear him through this vent, that must mean... I got an idea.
Gale was just skinny enough to work his way down the ship's climate control ducts, inch by inch.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, keep laughing, Metal Man. Keep on a giggling. Gale's gonna pay you a little visit.
Led by the master's laughter, he was able to locate the bridge. Being as sly as a fox, he crawled out of the vent and stood behind the constipator. Carefully, he observed the control panel. And, after diligent thought, he silently walked up behind the master and spoke.
So, are we almost to constipation?
You, bud?
Yeah. Surprised to see me, Snookums?
I don't know how you got out of the containment facility, but it's paralysis time for you, you little scuzz bucket.
Now, I'm in.
I'm on the control chair.
Yeah.
You pressed phase one of the emergency ejection seat.
Uh-huh.
I can't move.
That's just the way I like it. You ready for phase two?
No. Human, the ejection hatch on the ship's ceiling is not operational.
Oh.
My maintenance crew hasn't repaired it yet.
Oh.
It won't open.
Oh, you really think I'm going to fall for that one? No, you're going into space, Metal Man, and then I'm setting this ship's destination for Earth.
Remember, mortal, remember this. I survived your last attempt to evade me, and I'll survive this one. Now that hatch will not open. And if you press phase two of the emergency ejection system, woe be unto you. I've got ways of making you live long and suffer greatly. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand. I understand perfectly, man. But I'm willing to take my chance. Press.
Damage.
Hey, you were actually telling the truth. The ceiling's hatch didn't open at all, did it?
You are now arriving in the Great Creator's domain.
All right, mortal. In a few minutes, you're gonna suffer. You're gonna suffer greatly. They'll be talking about your suffering for years in contemplation. And I'm gonna suggest the Great Creator extend your punishment for years, centuries. I'm getting the last laugh, you piece of filth. I'm getting the last laugh.
Oh, gosh, he sounds like he's constipated.
Well, he is from that galaxy, so, you know.
Yeah.
This was created and produced by M&J Audio Theater. M stands for Mark Sawyer. J is for Jay Reel. They met in the sixth grade in 1977, and both shared a mutual interest of radio drama. And you can hear the influence of shows like X-1, Lum and Abner, Gunsmoke, and, of course, the door opening and the, of course, pleasant dreams at the end are the salute to Inner Sanctum and Jaime Brown. Now, they produced their first story, The Highway of Death, in 1989. They went ahead and submitted it to National Public Radio. It was amazing that NPR responded with an order for three more. The four episodes were accepted and broadcast at the NPR Playhouse in 1990. The following year, NPR ordered nine more installments of The Tales from the Morgue to be broadcast as a complete 13-show series in 92. There were a total of 19 shows produced, but six were rejected by NPR, and M&J were quick to point out that rejection by NPR had nothing to do with the quality of the show. The rejections merely reflect the stringent guidelines of NPR had for broadcast content at that time.
Yeah, I can picture these guys maybe stretching the limits of NPR's guides there.
Well, especially for the early 1990s, absolutely.
Yeah.
Today, NPR wouldn't have a problem with this. And I'm kind of imagining this might be one of those ones that was rejected.
Perhaps. But we do want to get moving because we got some great announcements for you and maybe some bonus material as we wrap up. We're kind of blocked up for time here, so we got to wrap up.
Blocked up for time. Yes, we are, but stay away from the cheese.
Here goes. Yes, and hard-boiled eggs. Return of the Master Constipator, Chet Cheddar's Tales in the Morgue.
I must be. Where are you? I can't see you nowhere.
Shut your trap, you glob of terrestrial mucus, and kneel before the Great Creator.
Oh, he'll have to kiss my tush first.
What is this? Is this human behaving disrespectfully?
The human is a smidgen mentally deranged from the space travel, sir. Might I have a word with him in private?
Of course. Proceed.
Oh, we're going to have a little chat? Oh, goody. Kind of limping there.
What do you think you're doing, Neanderthal? Do you not know who this is?
Oh, yeah. It's the big hoop-de-doo creator. I know who it is.
Master Constipator. You walk with a pronounced lisp. Why is this?
Oh, yes, I can explain that, sir. You see, there was this mad gang of insane cyborgs, and then...
Hey, that's a bold-faced lie.
Shut up, human. I'll handle this?
I'll tell you why he's limping, man. I tried to eject him in the ejector chair, but the hatch didn't open on the ceiling, so I slammed him up against the roof. That's why he's limping. That's his problem.
Is this true, Master?
No, sir! The human is nothing but a lying, conniving little piece of mortal trash.
Oh, he's just a mechanical dope, man. And that's not all. He's been talking about you behind your back. He's been saying stuff like you're just a faceless vapor with no intellectual momentum, and he wishes you'd just sort of dissolve. I heard him.
The master said this.
One more word in private with the human, sir, if you please.
Oh, boy, another little chat. Okay, let's talk.
Weasel carcass,
mm-hmm.
This is a god, and you're ticking him off.
Oh.
Now shut your trap.
Oh, well, why should I care? I'm going to be dissected anyway.
Now look, human, I can usually poke this big bag of wind into doing what I want.
Oh, yeah?
So let's work together on this, all right?
Okay.
You stop acting like an idiot, and I'll see what I can do about getting you off the hook, all right?
Oh, okay, all right, all right.
Just try to keep something in mind. This is a supreme being.
Oh, okay. Supreme being. I got it. I got it. Okay. Hey, great creator. I was just lying about that stuff the constipator said. He didn't say that stuff about you. But the ejector seat thing, that is the truth.
More reason why we should dissect this little creature right now, sir, and get it over with.
Hey,
what do you say?
Hey, you said you could talk this big vapor out of dissecting me, man.
What is this?
Nothing. More human lies, sir. Let's dismember the creature, please.
Hey, great creator, please. I have one last request before you do us in, okay?
Granted.
Hey, thanks. Well, it's really more of a tip. It's about the master constipator. You see, oh great one, there's really kind of something wrong with this basic design.
What are you gonna do, human?
He's supposed to be this big master, and he's got these great big shoulders and little bitty feet. He's top-heavy. So all I gotta do is just walk right up to him and give him a little push on the shoulders, just
don't
like this one.
Stop, mortal! Stop, human! Stop! I hate this!
I'm gonna stop you into nothing!
I'm gonna turn you to powder! Pathetic, man. I don't believe it!
Yeah.
The great creator laughing?
Yeah, he does have a sense of humor.
I have never experienced laughter before.
Feels good, man. Hey, you all right?
I cannot stop.
Uh-oh. Hey. Guess he laughed too hard.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess he did, didn't he?
What are you so happy about?
Do you know what this means, mortal? It means the master answers to no one now. Oh, come on, great creator. Send me to the side pits of Bulimia now, you big bag of wind. Oh, yeah. Oh, what a load off my metal back. Oh, am I going to celebrate?
You can't do much celebrating lying there on your back like that.
Right you are, Scuzz Breath. I had servants install propulsion units on my back for just such an eventuality. Back on my old feet again. You know, mortal, I am totally and completely dumbfounded.
Yeah?
You destroyed a deity.
Well, I...
With laughter.
It was...
I don't know how you did it. You're not special.
Well,
you have no magical powers.
I know.
You're simply bones and flesh.
Yeah.
But, mortal, you have gotten rid of that big bag of wind that's been looking over my head all these years.
I got lucky.
And my hatred of you has dissolved slightly.
Oh.
So I'll tell you what I'm going to do, mortal.
Okay.
And don't you leak out that I have any mercy. Do you understand?
Never. Never. What is it?
I'm going to let you take one of my constipator scout ships. They're easy to maneuver.
Oh, wow.
You get back to that floating blue orb that you live on and you stay there. If I see your greasy face in constipation again,
yeah,
I will not be merciful. Do you understand?
I understand.
Now get out of here.
I'm out of here. Home is where I wanted to be in the first place. So long, Metal Mouth.
Now I don't have to live a life of fear. Now I can put all my mental energies into causing it.
You've enjoyed our little tale for today. A story about a galaxy called Constipation. Highly irregular, don't you think? Oh, yes, yes. Well, I have to leave now. I have to take inventory, make sure no one's escaped. But please, do return for another chilling tale, won't you? Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Just heard Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue, today's installment, Return of the Master Constipator. The names and characters portrayed in this production are fictitious. Any similarities with actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. A production by M&J Audio Theater.
Oh, that was difficult.
And just like our friend Joe Bev, who did all the voices. All the voices were done by two individuals throughout the entire series of these Chet Cheddar tales. So
yeah, I hope we get to have Joe stop by again sometime.
Yeah, he's down in Florida.
He's a lot of fun.
He was in New York when we met him last time on here, and he's down in Florida now. So,
yep, good fella, good fella. Keeping radio alive.
This is one of many shows that we've done here on Erie House, is it not, Dale?
Well, this is wrapping up show number 499. Tomorrow, a little something special for you. For show number 500, since we had so much fun on Halloween with the All Music Show, I thought I'd get to play DJ one more time. Much like I did over at the Marriott when I was hired over there. We had a big band night. It was so cool. So it's all music from World War II tomorrow night at 6:30 right here on Erie House Radio.
It'll be really fun. Dale's really done a great job of matching these up with different segments for different parts of it. And if you love the big band stuff, you're going to really enjoy this. And have to keep your politically correct hat at home for this one, because as we kind of picked on the Germans and the Japanese a little bit during World War II, it kind of came out in our media, and there's a couple of those in here as well.
Yeah, it is definitely not politically correct. It's not intended to be humorous, especially even then. We were at war, but also it's just a part of history that we wanted to share. More of the music than the stereotypes. So
right,
hopefully
yeah.
We can all get past that and appreciate it for what it was, for when it was. In other words, don't keep yourself blocked up over it.
Oh, my. I told you, stay away from that train
car,
Jim. Hey, Dale.
Yes, sir.
Having finished and up with our 100th show, we've got working on 101. It's all written up and planned for some filming next week to present our next Weirdness Really Bad Movie 2-hour show. And
nice.
Should have an episode of Spaceship One in there, and the movie The Black Doll, and we'll be down at the Troll Hole Museum in Alliance, Ohio.
No kidding. The Troll Hole.
The Troll Hole. They have the Guinness Book of World Records collection of troll dolls.
So there's got to be a tie-in somehow to your movie, because your locations always seem to tie into the movie.
Right. And the closest I could get, there was no troll doll, movie in public domain, but I was able to get a crime club movie called The Black Doll. So that'll be our movie for the Troll
Hole. Ooh. For the Troll Hole. All right.
Yep.
Yeah, trolls are like little dolls. That's what we used to they call them trolls now, but do you remember back in the day they called them wishniks?
Wishniks, yeah.
Wishniks. Yeah.
Yeah, my co-host on that one, Pam, really wanted to do that, cuz she and her sister collected them. They were first released here in 59 and 60, and she and her sister collected them. Then they had a resurgence again, so
yeah. My poor wife, when she was just a young wee girl and in a certain type of school run by a certain religion, was yelled at her for worshiping false idols. She had a troll doll, a wishnik.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you should have a real idol of Vincent Price as he gets to shut the show down here, right?
Yep. We should.
Yep.
So we'll see you tomorrow night, 6:30, 2 hours of music. Scroll, baby, scroll, as we see you tomorrow night.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And only
when
him.
Next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
get well soon, Gar. And, folks, we will see you. We got just a few seconds left for me to burn up saying absolutely nothing. Farewell. See you, brother. Get your rest. All right.